We're talking about environmental pollution and microplastics this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Microplastics are these teeny tiny pieces of plastic that pollute the environment. And even though they're small, they really add up. Plastic is everywhere, and a lot of it is ending up in the oceans and in our Great Lakes. It's nearly impossible to avoid it, leaching out of our lunch containers. Plastic is inside of toys, electronics, shampoo, cosmetics, a zillion other products. Have you seen plastic pollution in and around the Great Lakes? Maybe you live on the shores of Lakes Michigan or Superior. Has it gotten worse? We're at 800-642-1234 through the hour. Lorena Rios Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior. She has been studying microplastics pollution for more than 15 years. Lorena, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So microplastics, we know it's everywhere, it's spreading. How small are these particles? Can you describe them to us?
Oh, okay. You know, there are so microscopic sizes. I don't know, maybe you can think in the pencil, the tip of the pencil is smaller than that, is that we can find it.
So this you definitely need a microscope because this is smaller than the tip of a pencil.
Yes, yes. We need to use a microscopic to separate that.
How do you know when you're looking at microplastics under the microscope that they are really just that, that they're plastic, because they are so small?
You know, that we are doing, we have one special instrument that we are using, and then we can really know if the material is plastic, it is something synthetic, or is something like a cotton or something that is not plastic.
So it could be a cotton fiber from a piece of clothing that may not be actually plastic.
Yes. We found it a lot of cotton and a lot of cellulosic material that is not plastic.
You have been looking at microplastics now for years and years, especially in the Great Lakes. What have you seen so far in your growing body of research?
You know that we are studying mainly is the here in San Luis River estuary, Superior, you know, and the main sources that we can found is directly to related with the wastewater treatment plant, and mainly that we are found it is fibers, but we found it these microbeads from the cosmetic products, and we analyzed the stomach from the fish, and we are found it mainly fibers. And in these fibers, like I can tell you, like 40% maybe is from natural material.
From natural material. Are you finding that you're finding more and more in the Great Lakes? How are you quantifying what you're finding?
You know, that we are doing is we are counting this material, the microplastic. We are not doing how much is the mass because it's very low. You know, in quantity, it's a lot, but in mass, it's very low.
We're talking with Lorena Rios Mendoza, who studies microplastics pollution at UW-Superior, where she's an associate professor of chemistry. What have you seen as far as plastic pollution where you live? What do you think can be done to better protect our lakes and streams? What questions do you have about plastics research on the Great Lakes? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Lorena, when we see these cotton fibers that you're talking about or under the microscope, how do the fibers come off our clothes and how do they make it to our oceans and our lakes?
Do you know that I'm saying is when you washing the your clothes, all the water go to the wastewater treatment plant, and this plant treatments are not ready to retain microplastic, you know, they are ready to kill the bacteria, so not retain this kind of the tiny material. And this is why this goes to the lakes, these go to the river, or these go to the lake, or to the ocean.
So there is no filter out there that can filter out microplastics right now in water?
Right now, no. Right now, no. We are not ready here in the United States to retain all this kind of material. In Europe, already they start to work in to develop new ways how to retain all this material. And here in the United States, sometimes they try to, at home, you can try to use the filters to retain in most possible this kind of fiber.
I use a lint trap. What about lint traps for your washing machine?
And they can work, you know, they can reduce the number of the fibers that go to the wastewater treatment plant, but at the end, they will go there.
Because I'm still disposing of that lint trap, it's going to end up in a landfill.
And landfill, and then they can be transported by the atmospheric way.
When you mention microbeads, I'm really surprised that they're still showing up, because weren't they banned back in 2015 and you were on the front cutting edge of getting them banned?
Yes, they are. But, you know, but again, the wastewater treatment plant can retain just for in the time, you know, but at the end is released. And we are seeing these microbeads for a long time.
Where are the
microbeads?
Where are the microbeads? What do they show up in?
You know that I'm saying is it is bonnet. This type that is just one kind of plastic, but still we have a lot that is trapped in the wastewater treatment plant, and during the time is releasing. You know, and this. Microbeads are so tiny that can so easily confused by natural food, by the fish, for example.
So the fish eat the microbeads, and then you find it inside the fish, and it gets into the ecosystem, the lake ecosystem.
Yeah, you know, and then we have the small fish is eating the micro these microbeads, and the bigger fish is eating the small fish, and so on, so on. And the main problem is not just the microplastic or the microbeads. The problem is that these kind of particles can absorb toxic compounds. And then this is the problem, because these toxic compounds are so easily released inside to the body, the organism, but and can produce cancer and can produce another bad things.
And so when that fish is then consuming those microbeads, those microplastics, that can get into organs and be toxic or cause cancer?
Yes. The question now is how long take to produce this problem in the organs, in the fish in this case? And we really don't know what is the kinetics, how fast can be this transference. And we really don't know what happened when we consume the fish.
Because then we're actually consuming the fish that has consumed the microbeads, which we are now eating, and that too can have implications on our body.
Yes, if the toxic compounds that could be in the plastic is going to the organism, we don't know if the problem stops in the organisms in the fish or the problem goes with us when we consume the fish.
We are getting an update on microplastics and the impact these fibers have on the Great Lakes and ourselves. Lorena Rios Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior, and her lab studies plastic pollution. Do you fish? Have you noticed plastics in and around water? Has it affected where you cast your line? What do you think we can do to better protect our waterways and reduce the plastic? Join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with Lorena Rios Mendoza right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about microplastics here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So when we eat a bite of food or take a sip of water, we're almost certainly taking in tiny, tiny plastic particles along with it. And these tiny fragments, they're known as microplastics. The research field, pretty new. There's not enough data to say exactly how microplastics are affecting human health. Do you work with an environmental group or the state DNR? How often do you come across plastics in the environment? What is being done by your organization to address plastic pollution? Be part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lorena Rios Mendoza studies environmental chemistry pollution with a focus on microplastics at UW-Superior, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Tim is joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. I was wondering if this is found in the Great Lakes. That's a huge source of fresh water, drinking water. Is this coming out of the tap, too, or is it, can it be filtered before it comes out of the tap? Or
Tim, thank you so much for the question there. Lorena, I know it might be hard to hear him, but asking, you know, so many millions of people rely on the Great Lakes for their water source. What impact does it have on our tap water?
You know, I think the water, the clean water is coming clean, yeah, but the problem is the type of container that we are using. It is plastic. Maybe we can drink it, flakes of plastic, very tiny, small particles of plastic in the water.
And so you're saying, too, that when we drink bottled water out of a plastic container, that, too, is leaching plastic?
Yeah, sometimes, yes. And sometimes they are, you know, the water bottles, the plastic water bottles, they contain to make some chemicals that is called phthalates that make the plastic soft. And they are not chemically bonded with the plastic and then can easily release to the water. And we are drinking that type of compounds that can produce cancer.
Is there any research or work going on to try to build better filters for tap water that could be able to trap some of these chemicals, some of these microplastics?
You know, actually, no, because mainly of the filters are made by plastic.
Wow.
Yeah. This is the plastic is so good material, but now we know it's a problem because the plastic can stay here forever and ever.
Let's bring in another call now. Haley is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Haley.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
It's more of a comment. So I'm in Milwaukee, and there's a group that meets here that's doing really wonderful things for the city called Plastic Free MKE. They meet the first Monday of every month, and they do a bunch of volunteer efforts around the city to try to reduce plastic waste in the city and the water. They do cleanup initiatives. They're trying to get restaurants to move to be like lake friendly, which is a plastic free to-go containers and stuff like that. They do pop-ups not recently, but the last 5K there was. They organized it like a week before to make all the cups that they gave out biodegradable instead of handing out single-use plastic cups.
Oh, wow. Haley, this is neat. So Plastic Free MKE, have you been involved in this organization for a while?
Yes. So it's the first Monday of every month, and they meet at the, I'm trying to think of the center. It's in Milwaukee, and it's like the eco-friendly center.
Okay, yeah.
And, yeah, anyone can join. They're awesome. And even if you can't make the Monday night meetings, they still do volunteer efforts randomly for events and for education.
Well, Haley, thank you for bringing it to our attention. We appreciate it. Lorena, Plastic Free MKE, it sounds like there is a real growing effort there in Milwaukee to pay attention to plastic.
Yeah, you know, totally. Because remember, always I say my students, we are the source. And then we need to stop the source of the plastic pollution. And then what does mean is that we need to avoid the plastic in the most possible, yes, because we start the pollution and then we can stop this pollution. And leave at the plastic is so painful because you can see how the people is using the plastic and you try to don't use. And like this organization in Milwaukee is so wonderful because we need to change the way that we are seeing the plastic. The plastic is not just garbage. The plastic is something else.
We're talking with Lorena Rios Mendoza, who researches toxic compounds absorbed on plastic particles, and these are ending up in our oceans and Great Lakes. What steps do you take in your life to reduce the amount of plastic you use? Are you part of a group? Are you concerned about microplastics in the environment? What do you want scientists to work on next in this research? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. And by the way, I just learned here from our producers, when Haley was talking about plastic-free MKE, they meet at the Urban Ecology Center in Milwaukee. Lorena, you've really worked on trying to reduce the amount of plastic exposure in your life. How do you avoid plastic in your life?
You know, number one, all the plastic that I have, I keep it. I don't throw away. It's with me still. And change everything in glass, you know. And sometimes I can buy it some products that I really like it, but it is in plastic. I avoid. This is what I'm saying. It's painful. And yes, and I try to use always my mug for the cup or my cup for the coffee.
So you've really transitioned more to glass in your life.
Yes, reusing
glass.
Yeah.
What happened?
Now, you know, I'm sorry. And now, you know, the lids are in metal. And then this is good because before it was just plastic.
What happens when we microwave our plastic container with our lunch in it at noontime?
You know that I'm saying the plastic contains some chemicals that are called phthalates to make the plastic soft, and this can migrate to the food when you are doing the just warming in the microwave. It's exactly the same that I'm doing in the lab when I'm extracting the toxic compounds. It's the same thing that you are doing in the microwave. And then you transfer all the chemicals to your food.
So you should really try not to microwave in those plastic containers.
Oh, no, never, yeah. No.
Let's bring in Marcus now in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Good morning. So I've heard that there's some research done that reverse osmosis filters are to the point where they can almost filter out almost all of the microplastics that may be in water. The other thing is we should also take into consideration our rivers and streams. More specifically, mussels and clams that are at the bottom of the streams, because they're usually anchored to a stationary point. And as you have the water column moving by, they can basically act as like a filter for what's coming through. And so anything that's on the bottom, which would probably be more of the microplastics because they're slightly denser than water, or moving in the water column, that's all getting absorbed into the food there too.
Marcus, thank you for bringing these points up. So first of all, Lorena, reverse osmosis filters, are they any more helpful here in addressing microplastics?
You know, these fibers are made by plastic. Yeah, but this reverse osmosis is to retain very, very tiny particles. That it is good. Yes, it's working good.
When you look at things like mussels and clams, and they take in the water that is moving past them, what are we seeing in them?
You know, here in, I don't know, in the Great Lakes, the studies, but I know in another places, and I'm working with students, graduate students in Mexico, and we found it mainly fibers. And again, the fibers that were found are like a 50% is the cotton and natural sources, and 50% is the plastic, like a polyester.
Like polyester plastic, and
plastic,
through these fibers moving through the water. How do you collect your samples? How do you collect your water?
Oh, the water, we just collect the water with a container, and then we filter. For the organism, we take the gut, you know, the stomach, the intestine, and destroy it with a chemical analysis, digestion, and then we can separate the plastic material.
So you, go ahead.
For the water that we are doing is using the manta troll in the heating in San Luis River or the lakes. And this is, we troll in like a 1 hour, and then we filter the water and we collect, we retain the in the net, the all the material, the debris, natural debris or synthetic debris. And then later in the lab, we separate.
Lots of separation then there in the lab. UW's superior chemist Lorena Rios Mendoza researches plastic pollution and its consequences on our freshwater systems. We're learning about the contamination from these tiny plastic fibers, polyester fibers. It's called microplastics. They're everywhere. Are you trying to reduce your plastic use? Have you stopped using plastic straws? Do you try to choose products that are environmentally friendly? What's that transition like to try to reduce plastic in your life? There's room for you in this conversation. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute, more conversation about microplastics with Lorena Rios Mendoza here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Humans have produced more than 8 billion tons of plastic, mostly since the 1950s, and less than 10% of it has been recycled. Over time, much of it is broken down into these really tiny particles that we're talking about making their way into the Great Lakes, our rivers, our oceans, eventually contaminating food and water. Microplastics research is pretty new. There's a lot to figure out on what it does to humans. And what questions do you have about microplastics? What do you want scientists to learn? How do you think we can reduce the amount of plastic ending up in the Great Lakes? What action steps are you taking in your life? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lorena Rios Mendoza studies environmental chemistry pollution with a focus on microplastics. She's an associate professor of chemistry at UW Superior, and she stays with us taking your questions this hour. Let's go to Mo now, joining us from Oconto. Hi, Mo.
Hello. I was just reading in Rolling Stone magazine. They had a fantastic article on Planet Plastic, and there's some legislation, Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act in 2020. It's put through by Senator Udall from New Mexico. But one of the things that he mentions is that we're eating a credit card worth of plastic each week.
Oh, my goodness.
And in later in the article, they said one of the first things that needs to go is those plastic grocery bags, and that kind of gets the ball rolling. But there's a lot of big companies involved, like Coca-Cola and Nestle's and the big oil companies that make money selling oil. And most of your plastic bottles are made with fresh oil, not recycled.
Well, Mo, looking at this legislation, it would ban single-use plastic. It would require 10-cent container deposits, and the ban would start at the beginning of 2022. Lorena, what do you think about policy and legislation that would fight the use of plastic, basically, and put some more policy around it?
Do you know, I think that this is necessary to change the behavior and how the people is seeing the plastic, because honestly, we are breathing, we are eating, the plastic is in contact with your skin. We have everything in plastic, and we are using for almost everything, that for the war, for the eat, for everything in plastic. And then it's necessary to be educated about the plastic. And that he's mentioning in this magazine, the report about the plastic. It is true. We are eating plastic and we are breathing plastic. We need to do something. Yeah. And the main thing, I think, is the education. But we need to start to put in a feed in the plastic bags, for example, because in that way the people can stop to use it, you know, because it is free. They think it is mandatory to use plastic.
We heard from Cornell, who called from Merrill, couldn't stay with us, but thinks we should get rid of all plastic and transition to glass. Lorena, it sounds like Cornell is following in your footsteps there and really, you know, trying to use more glass. But also, you know, glass doesn't break down. You have to keep it.
But, you know, but the glass, is we can recycle.
Okay.
It's kind of easily, you know, but the plastic, no. It's cheaper to make more plastic than try to recycle. This is why we have a very low recycle. You know, it's like less than between 10 to 15%.
So the economics there say it's, you know, it's basically pushing us to just throw it out because the manufacturers can make it more easily than recycle it.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Let's look at microplastics and chemicals interacting after the Husky Energy oil refinery explosion in 2018. You collected samples from Newton Creek, which runs through the refinery in the St. Louis estuary, which the waterway empties into. What chemicals did you find through this research?
You know that we are studying is the polyaromatic hydrocarbon that is semi-persisting pollutant because it is from the incomplete combustion from gasoline. We are studying the polychlorinated biphenyls that were banned in the 70s, but it still is here in the San Luis River. We can find it still.
So and those are PCBs.
Yeah, the PCBs. And we're studying the organochlorine pesticides too. You know, all these kind of the toxic compounds are persistent because they can stay like a more than 100 years, you know, trapped in the sediment, for example. And then after the Husky explosion was released, a lot of the different kind of toxic compounds and the polyaromatic hydrocarbon is one of this big family that we are studying. Already we detected in the water, but we just do the detection. We don't do the quantification. And now I have another student that she's working with the natural debris and synthetic debris to see what is the competition to catch these toxic compounds. But still, we don't have the results.
Do we know how these toxic chemical contaminants interact with the microplastics that are in the water already?
You know, the plastic... all these kind of compounds are hydrophobic, don't like the water.
Okay.
And then it is plastic there, plastic debris in the water, and then they go and attach in the plastic. And then we can think, oh, the plastic is clean in the water. Yes, because it's absorbing all these kind of toxic compounds. But the problem is how we can tell to the organism, to the fish, hey, don't eat this because it's toxic. Yeah. And we don't have one magic vacuum to take it out all the plastic from the river or the lake.
Let's take another call now. Tom is with us from Oshkosh. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
What's on?
My question.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
Okay. My question has to do with the fact of how much have we documented the effects of the absorption of these plastics in wildlife. I've seen articles about whales and other mammals that have washed up on shore dead with hundreds of pounds of plastic in them. And don't we oftentimes use the effect on mammals of other toxins as an example of what happens to humans?
Tom, thank you. Lorena, what do we know how microplastics are appearing in other, you know, in other mammals, especially wildlife?
You know, in the big organisms, you can see how the plastic, you can see macroplastic or big fragments that is trapped in the stomach, in the intestines, because everything that is floating in the water is food. And then the organisms, the mammals, the whales, or the fish, they cannot distinguish it is food, natural food or not, yeah? And the situation is that I'm saying is that we need to learn more about what is the time to take for all the toxic compounds absorbed in the surface of the plastic, go to the tissue, and the tissue, you know, how it's affecting the organism. Now that we can see with the big animals is the effect that they have the stomach totally full with the plastic, but they are dying by starvation because it's not real food. And the other problem that they have, they cannot easily float.
They cannot easily float?
No, because, in reverse, they cannot go deeper in the water because it's plastic in the stomachs, and then they have the tendency to float.
Oh, and that, for turtles, can be very damaging as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Lorena Rios Mendoza, who studies microplastics pollution at UW-Superior, where she's an associate professor of chemistry. Are you concerned about plastic building up in the ocean? How is plastic affecting your lake? Join in 800-642-1234. John called from Eau Claire, couldn't stay with us. John's an engineer with Nestle and has a lighthouse project to reduce plastics by 2025. John says we use steel cans, no plastic in our supply chain. It's a big name, and that doesn't always mean these companies aren't working to help the environment. So there, Nestle, doing a pretty big change there, as John mentioned. Lorena?
I think the big companies try to do change, but they are doing very, very slow. And like, for example, with the cosmetic products, there was only just one kind of plastic. And we have more than 5,000 different kinds of plastics. And then they are using plastic still.
So you're saying that even if they ban one type of microbeads or one type of plastic, there are still so many ingredients containing plastic within those cosmetics and beauty products?
Yes, exactly.
What is a consumer to do? How can we read the labels? How can we be informed?
You know, because they put it the chemical name of the plastic. Nobody knows what is the chemical name, you know. And then they need to put it that is, between parentheses, something that is plastic. And then in that way, or we need to, they need to rethink in the way that they prepare whatever is the product, you know.
Why is plastic such a good chemical to be used in products that we put on our skin and our hair?
You know, this is a situation that the plastic are so wonderful material, but at the same time they are so bad because they can stay here in the nature for centuries. Always I say to my students, the plastic are like a diamond forever.
Mm. Like a diamond forever. UW-Superior's Lorena Rios Mendoza studies microplastic samples from the Great Lakes. She's been focused on this research more than 15 years. On the forefront, she was on the forefront of getting the ban on microbeads back in 2015. She still sees them. What troubles you about microplastics? You can't totally avoid microplastics or the chemicals found in plastic, but what tips can you share about reducing your footprint, reducing your exposure? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute, more conversation with Lorena Rios Mendoza here on the Ideas Network. Morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Microplastic pollution, that is what we're looking at. More than 22 million pounds of plastic pollution ends up in the Great Lakes every year. And researchers are saying that it never really goes away. They've found stunningly high amounts of tiny plastic pieces in all five Great Lakes, which provide drinking water for 40 million people. What do you want to know about microplastics and the potential health hazards? If you work at a recycling facility or in waste management, what is the status of how we recycle our plastic? Are we getting it right? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Lorena Rios Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior, where she studies microplastics in her lab. Let's take another call now. Mark is with us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. How are you doing, Kate and Dr. Mendoza?
Great. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm an environmental consultant, a geologist, and one of the things that we're really working kind of deep into right now is the PFAS issues, because PFAS are associated with some plastics. And I was wondering if her research, Dr. Mendoza's research, is going to cross over and look into the PFAS issues. They're a very ubiquitous compound. They're found pretty much everywhere in food containers, in clothing items and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And they're considered forever compounds. And so I was wondering if her research was to cross over into that realm a little bit as well.
Mark, thanks for bringing up PFAS. Lorena, what is the intersection here of microplastics and these forever chemicals, these PFAS?
Yeah, this is very, very important. Toxic compound that we need to study. But I'm not studying already the PFAS because we don't have the analytical instrumentation to work with this type of compounds.
So but in your lab, you don't have the analytical instruments in order to be able to study PFAS. So we don't even know yet how PFAS are interacting with these microplastics, but perhaps you could even speculate that what you've seen from the chemicals from the Husky explosion, that there perhaps are some interactions.
Yeah, you know, the plastic that I'm saying can absorb of this kind of the compounds. They can absorb the PFAS so easily, but I don't have any results about it.
Yeah. So the last time we spoke with you, you also mentioned microplastics being able to penetrate the placenta. Have there been any other research or developments on that?
No, I don't see any other result about it. You know, just the only, I was reading one paper that they say that they can transfer to the brain, but I don't think so that they can really go to the blood stream, you know. It is just I think they use the microplastic that has some dye, and that they were detecting was just the dye, not really the plastic.
I see.
Still, what is in very nano sizes, no, I don't think can do it. But the placenta, yes, they found it.
John from Illinois called, couldn't stay with us, wants to know if our immune systems are being compromised in any way due to consuming microplastics. Do we know anything there about our immune systems?
No, really, because we don't know what is the real effect in the human, the consumption of the microplastic. Is, for example, we're breeding the fibers, yes? But EPA said if the fiber is bigger than 10 micrometers, the same organism, the lungs can expel these fibers, but I really don't know.
So we're really at the infancy of what microplastics are doing to humans. You're taking part in the Great Lakes Marine Debris Action Plan, and this plan started a five-year plan started this year. What does that entail?
You know, with this plan, and the idea is to try to bring the prevention actions that to know more about what is the type of research that we can do it that can help more to have a harmonization methodology that we can relate it whatever that we are doing, and then we can compare. We can try to reduce the impact, and we can try to do the education to the community.
Do you
this
think
is the main goals.
Yeah, do you think there is more organization among the scientists about who is doing what, who's researching what on microplastics? Do you feel like there is a growing community?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of universities working with this. We have a lot of non-governmental organizations. We have a lot of scientific citizens. Yeah, we have a lot of organizations working with this. However, we need to work more about the education in the community. They need to know that the plastic is not just the garbage. The plastic is one pollutant.
Well, let's bring in Nick now in Superior, where you are. Nick, hi.
Hi. I have a question related to, been listening to this, to Dr. Mendoza, about taking samples from that Newton's Creek in Superior. I grew up there my whole life, and that creek has been running through the residential living area there ever since that refinery was built. So I'm just wondering from the doctor after, you know, I heard that there's PCBs in there. What about the long-term health effects of the people who've resided there?
Nick, great question. Lorena?
Yeah, you know that I'm saying after the Husking explosion is when I'm start collecting 2 years ago. Yes, I start collecting the samples, and we are in the process to analyze the samples. And yes, we every time that we were to collect in the Newton Creek close to the San Luis River, we can smell it, the petroleum smell, you know, and we can see the oil. But I don't have a still results. What is, how big is the concentration? What is the numbers? I don't know yet.
Has there been some good research on the creek through the decades? Are you able to look at past research on Newton Creek?
Yes, DNR has some results, you know, and they say they have a polyaromatic and PCBs in the sediments that they found it, and that I'm saying they say the compost can stay for more than 100 years, and many of them can produce cancer and are endocrine disruptors.
Lorena, plastic being unavoidable, what can we do to be better recyclers? I mean, there's been a whole push to stop the use of plastic bags and to stop plastic straws. What is the next step?
You know, that I'm saying, it's painful to leave the plastic, but we need to keep in mind not just the 3 R that we were teaching in the school, the recycle, reduce, and the use, you know, we need to refuse to use plastic, and we need to remove the plastic. This means if we see some plastic in the street and on the beach, we need to take it and put it in the garbage can.
Take action and put it in the right place. Let's go to Mary now in Viola. Mary, hi.
Hi, this is Mary, yes. I belong to a group that we formed in the end of 2015-16 called Viroqua Plastics Free, VPF, and we started our program by trying to work, and we did work with the Kickapoo School District during their summer school, teaching the young ones to stop, just say no to the use of packing groceries or vegetables in these one-use plastic bags, and rather bringing in your own bags for grocery shopping. We're veering into a lot of other things, of course. We have meetings on a monthly basis.
But it's very active in starting with the young children, that generation. Lorena, what about us talking to young people about plastic?
You know, always when I have the meeting in the NOAA, I'm safe. The children are the solution because they really listen to you. You know, they really pay attention. I'm not saying that, you know, the teenager son of them, they can pay attention and they try to do some action. But sometimes the old people, they say, oh, yes, I know, and then later forgot, and they continue, you know, using the plastic. But I think the children are the solution to this problem.
Lorena, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Lorena Rios-Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior, where she studies microplastics. And thanks to you, we heard from Plastic Free MKE. We heard from VPF in Viroqua. You can find a slideshow of pictures on microplastics at WPR.org/mornings. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.